We were so thankful that Marshall's cardiologist took it as seriously as she did. But there are a lot of doctors out there that A, don't know what they're dealing with, or B, don't take it as seriously.
Welcome to Heart with Anna. I am Anna Jaworski and the host of your program. I'm also a heart mom. My son Alexander is 26 years old. He was diagnosed with hypoplastic left heart syndrome and he is post-Fontan and doing well. I'm very excited about today's show to feature a special heart mom. Today's show is entitled Heart Family Living with Plastic Bronchitis. What is plastic bronchitis? What are the red flags that lead to a diagnosis of plastic bronchitis? And exactly how is it diagnosed? More importantly, what can be done about it? Today's guest will answer those questions for us and more. Molly Fee is the mom of two boys and lives southeast of Pittsburgh. Her 9-year-old younger son, Marshall, was born with hypoplastic left heart syndrome, or HLHS. Marshall had his Fontan at age 4 and also had a repaired tricuspid valve. About 18 months ago, Marshall was diagnosed with a rare complication associated with complex congenital heart defects called plastic bronchitis. In today's show, we're going to learn more about what plastic bronchitis is and how one American family has dealt with this condition and what advice they have for others living with plastic bronchitis. Welcome to Heart with Anna Molly Fee.
Hi, Anna. Thanks so much for having me on today.
Well, I'm excited to have you on, Molly. I've enjoyed getting to know you on Facebook. And I'd like us to start with you telling us about your pregnancy with Marshall. You had already had one healthy pregnancy 4 years prior, right?
That's correct.
So tell us what your pregnancy with Marshall was like.
During my pregnancy with Marshall, I did feel quite sick and tired throughout the whole thing. I think this can be a pretty normal thing for some women, so I never thought anything was amiss. I did go through several routine ultrasounds with Marshall that always came back normal, up until my 38-week ultrasound where they found I had low amniotic fluid. And this is when the doctors decided to induce labor with Marshall.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. They ended up doing another ultrasound just before they induced me to check that his lungs were mature. But again, no abnormalities or anything were brought up to me. And he was born a perfectly healthy looking little boy.
Aw. You had no clue. You'd had all these ultrasounds. You were worried about the lungs. When did they discover that Marshall actually had a heart defect?
It was a bit of a shocking discovery for us. Just after he was born, one of the labor and delivery nurses noticed he was turning blue around his mouth, and they quickly took him away to the nursery. He was born in a smaller hospital, so they didn't have a NICU or anything like that there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but they were able to put him on oxygen while they ran some tests and chest x-rays.
It's funny how at the smaller hospitals, they don't have some of the sophisticated equipment. And so they rely on old-fashioned techniques like x-rays. And that's what my son had at the beginning for the longest time. He had chest x-rays all the time.
Yeah, that's basically all they were able to do there. And as we later found out, they can't diagnose a heart problem that
way. So, they cannot diagnose, especially hypoplastic left heart syndrome, unless there's something majorly wrong. Like with my son, he was in congestive heart failure and they could see that the heart was too enlarged. Oh, wow. But your baby was just born, so it wouldn't have had a chance to become congested yet.
Right. It was the cyanosis was really the only indicator that there was something wrong.
Okay, so they whisked him away. Did you even get a chance to hold Marshall?
It was like I had enough seconds for me to look down at him and see he was a boy, because I didn't want to know the gender ahead of time. So it was maybe 3 seconds that I got to hold him and they took him away.
So heartbreaking. So you have the baby ripped away from you.
Mm-hmm.
You're already concerned because they had to take him early.
Right.
Did they leave you with any kind of reassurance? Was your husband with you?
It's funny, my husband actually was not there. My sister was with me during the delivery, and I feel like she was more concerned. I was really so tired, and I didn't have an epidural or anything, so it was like whatever pain medicine they were able to give me through my IV. But my sister was like, what is going on? Where is the baby? What is wrong? And then my husband did show up to the hospital with my older son a little later, and he was very concerned. So the doctors actually came in and they were like, oh, it can't be that serious. He looks too healthy. He was 7 pounds, 4 ounces.
Oh, wow. Big healthy boy.
Yeah, it was crazy because he scored like a 9 and a 9 on his Apgar scores. So, you know,
these hypoplasts can really surprise the doctors. Alex scored an 8 and a 9.
Yeah.
So you don't think there's anything that wrong.
No, you don't. You think it's going to be some minor thing and then you'll be on your way home, you know?
Right. So what happened?
So they couldn't figure out what was wrong with him. And they said, well, we're going to go ahead and send Marshall up to Pittsburgh Children's Hospital by helicopter. They're like, this is what we do in this situation if we can't figure out what's wrong. So they came and they got him on the helicopter and took off. And my husband immediately headed for Pittsburgh, which is about an hour and a half away. And I was left there to recover from labor. And after a few hours, my husband Joe called and was like, the cardiology people just came out and said, little Marshall's heart is pretty messed up. And he was like, there's veins that are too small or not there. And he's missing pieces of his heart that should be there. And
oh, Molly.
Yeah.
And you had to hear that on a telephone.
Yeah. Yeah, over the phone. And I was all by myself. Wow. My sister had my other son, and Joe went with Marshall. So, it's pretty surreal, you know?
Yeah.
Like looking back how it all went down.
Okay. So it sounds like in Pittsburgh, they were pretty quickly able to identify that it was hypoplastic left heart syndrome. Although I imagine that's a diagnosis neither you nor your husband had ever heard before.
Yeah, I had no idea about HLHS or, I mean, congenital heart disease at all. I had never heard those words in my life. Mm-hmm. So it was all new, definitely.
How old was Marshall when he had his first operation?
That day, the day he was born, they said Marshall will require surgery tomorrow in order to survive.
Oh my goodness. So,
yeah, it was like a bomb.
Absolutely.
You know?
Now, did they give him prostaglandin E1 to try and keep his PDA open?
I am not sure. I recovered for a few hours and then they let me go, but I wasn't able to get up to the hospital that same day. And when I showed up the next morning before his surgery, which was the first thing in the morning, he was on so many things. I had never seen anything like that in my life.
Oh,
you know,
it's so scary to see
it is scary.
Little baby attached to so many different wires and tubes and
equipment. Yeah. And they were like, would you like to hold him before we take him back to surgery? And I was like, yes, but I was so scared because he had so many lines and
was he intubated?
Monitors. He was.
Yeah. So then it's not like you can grab him and hold him to your chest. You're just standing, hovering over the bed.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's not a comfortable way to hold your baby.
No, he was on a little mat thing even. So I was holding the mat with him on it. So
Yeah, oh my goodness.
Pretty strange, you know?
I know. When you look back, doesn't it almost feel like it happened to somebody else?
Yes, it feels like a different world for sure.
This content is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. The opinions expressed in the podcast are not those of Hearts Unite the Globe, but of the hosts and guests, and are intended to spark discussion about issues pertaining to congenital heart disease or bereavement.
You are listening to Heart to Heart with Anna. If you have a question or comment that you would like addressed on our show, please send an email to Anna Jaworski at Anna at hearttoheartwithanna.com. That's Anna, at hearttoheartwithanna.com. Now, back to Heart to Heart with Anna.
Molly, before the break, we learned a little bit about your son's heart defect and his first surgery. In this segment, I want to talk about the plastic bronchitis. First of all, did he have his Fontan before the plastic bronchitis was diagnosed?
He did. One thing that was unusual a little bit about Marshall was that it took so long for the plastic bronchitis to appear. Mm-hmm. So he was 3.5 at his Fontan, and then he was 8 when he was diagnosed with plastic bronchitis.
Oh, wow. So he went for a good number of years with no complications beyond the normal ones, I imagine. How did he do with his Fontan? Were there any complications after that surgery?
He did have persistent chylus effusions after his Fontan. He was there for 15 days. He had to go NPO, or no food, no drink by mouth, for 8 days.
Oh.
In order.
Wow.
Yeah. It was definitely one of Marshall's bigger battles.
Well, yeah, because he was 3.5. So he was used to having snacks and treats and real meals. And
yes. Yes.
To be denied all of that, that's pretty rough. So they felt that going NPO would prevent the pleural effusions?
Yes. And it worked. After the 8 days, we very slowly got to reintroduce food and drink, but he was on a fat-free diet for 6 weeks after that.
Wow. That's rough with the little one.
Yes. It was a challenge.
And you
sure.
had another child too, that you also had to feed.
Yes. Yeah, so I remember Wyatt, my older son, eating ramen noodles in the basement, you know, because Marshall couldn't have it. So we're like sneaking food, you know.
Oh, poor Marshall. You just know he could probably smell it, and he knew it was
going on. Yeah. So looking back, I guess that kind of pointed that there may be a problem in the future.
Not necessarily, right.
Well,
that's actually a very common complication. Alexander, after his second Fontan, because he had a Fontan revision, we were in the hospital for 26 days with pleural
effusions.
And it felt like forever because he was 17.
Oh my goodness, yes.
Yeah. But they didn't do the NPO. I mean, he was eating normal foods within 24 hours of having his surgery.
Yeah, it was interesting because right after the Fontan, they were like, okay, you know, we're going to give him chicken nuggets and fries. They wanted fattening food. And it was like immediately. The effusions were chylus. So I guess the lymph fluid was the fluid in his chest.
Okay.
And they tried a few things for a couple days. And then they were like, no, we have to go in PO. That's really the only thing we can try at this point.
Okay, so it was a chylus pleural effusion. It wasn't just a clear pleural effusion. Okay, have they told you that that was an early indicator that there could be a problem later on?
I have heard that it's common with kids that get plastic bronchitis that they dealt with that after their Fontan, but I don't think it's every time. You know what I mean?
Right, yeah. Okay, so he recovered from the Fontan. How long was it before you felt that he was more like himself after the Fontan?
After the 6 weeks of no fat, he did so good. He was like a regular kid. I mean, his energy, just the way he looked, you would never know he had a heart problem. And it just, seemed like it just got better and better, you know, as time went on.
Yeah.
So I think we were starting to get comfortable.
I totally understand. And yet, with every single cardiology visit, you're waiting for the other shoe to drop, right?
Right.
Okay. So when did you start to notice that there might be something wrong with Marshall?
We were actually out of town and Marshall woke up in the morning and he was like, I can't get good air. I can't breathe. And we were in a hotel and I was like, maybe it's the air in here or something. I actually gave him a puff off of an albuterol inhaler and he started coughing and coughed a big something into the sink. And I thought it was just mucus.
Right.
It really didn't dawn on me what was happening.
Well, yeah. I mean, what would you think? Why did he have an inhaler? Did he have asthma?
Actually, my older son has asthma.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's weird because later Marshall's cardiologist was like, that was the best thing you could have done, you know?
Wow.
But at the time, I didn't know, you know?
Right. It was a mom's instincts. Yeah, yeah. You just knew the right thing to do. So he coughed up a cast. You just didn't know it was a cast.
Right. Right.
Wow.
It progressively got worse. So he coughed another one the next morning. Again, it didn't register.
Now, did you look at what he coughed up?
I did. Okay. And
so explain to the people who have never heard of plastic bronchitis or never seen anything about it. It doesn't look like phlegm.
No. Marshall's was pink.
Oh, wow.
But
now, is it tinged with pink because of blood?
It is, and it's only because of the inflammation in the airways. It's not that your lungs are actually bleeding.
Okay.
I mean, maybe that happens. I don't know. But they told me it was pink because of the inflammation. But I just thought, oh, maybe that's just some weird mucus. But it was large, larger than normal if you have a cold or something.
So would you say it was like the size of a dime or?
I'd say like a nickel or a quarter.
Oh, very large.
Yeah, yeah. So later I found out that the casts actually, if you spread them out in saline or something, they look like an actual mold of a bronchial tree. So you think of the lungs and the fingers that come out like a little tree.
Yeah.
That's what they look like if you spread them out, which I didn't do at first.
Well, no, of course not. You're just kind of mortified that your kid's coughing this stuff up.
Right.
Now, did you have to give him the albuterol the next day as well before he coughed it up, or did it just come up on its own?
Yeah, it just kind of came up on its own and he went off to school. We didn't think too much of it. A few days later, he got sick with a fever. He felt terrible. He couldn't move. And he just started repeatedly coughing things out into the sink. And that's when I was like, oh my gosh, this is plastic bronchitis.
You already knew the term plastic bronchitis?
I did, yes.
How is it that you came to know that? Because that seems fairly sophisticated.
I am kind of, I guess, an investigator of all possibilities of what might happen, what could happen. And so before Marshall's Fontan, I became aware of plastic bronchitis and PLE.
Mm-hmm. For those listeners who don't know what PLE is, that's protein losing enteropathy. That's another fairly rare but possible complication from having a Fontan heart.
Yeah, and those are really scary.
Yeah.
I had forgotten about it over the years, but then when I saw him coughing these things that I knew weren't normal, I knew what it was. And I took a picture of it and I sent it to a dear heart mom friend of mine whose son also is treated in Pittsburgh. And she was like, you need to save that and you need to call cardiology right away. She's like, I don't like the looks of that. And so they had me bring Marshall in through the ER, and they were so thankful to have the cast because they could send it to the lab and make sure what exactly it was made of. But they were like, yes, that's a cast, plastic bronchitis cast. So that was, you know, kind of the beginning of it.
Mm-hmm. The beginning of a new journey for you. And was your pediatric cardiologist able to take it from there?
She was. She's really fantastic. We're so thankful they took it as seriously as they did. I think a lot of times some doctors don't even know what they're dealing with, or they feel like it's something that they can just kind of manage. Until it gets to a point where you can't manage it.
Mm-hmm.
But his cardiologist took it very seriously. The first thing she did was schedule him for a cath to assess his pressures and his heart function, because they think with the elevated pressures in the heart from the Fontan circulation combined with these leaks into the airways from the lymphatic system. That's what causes it. They wanted to try to reduce the pressures in his heart, so they placed a stent in his fenestration.
Oh, wow. They did that during a catheterization?
They did, yes.
Okay. Were they hoping that that might make the plastic bronchitis go away or make it more manageable?
Yes. It was hopefully to stop the casting or at least slow it down. Mm-hmm. And that was pretty dramatic change for Marshall. Yeah. And I don't know if it's normal for kids that have to have this done, that it's so dramatic for them. But Marshall went from oxygen saturations of 95. And after the stent, he was dipping into the high 70s. So, yeah, it was crazy.
Heart to Heart with Anna is a presentation of Hearts Unite the Globe and is part of the HUG Podcast Network. Hearts Unite the Globe is a nonprofit organization devoted to providing resources to the congenital heart defect community to uplift, empower, and enrich the lives of our community members. If you would like access to free resources pertaining to the CHD community, please visit our website at www.congenitalheartdefects.com for information about CHD, the hospitals that treat children with CHD, summer camps for CHD survivors, and much, much more.
Before the break, we were talking about Marshall's journey to treatment, but Molly left us on the edge of our seat. I have to know what happens next. So tell me more. His saturation levels dipped. They weren't supposed to dip like that. They were supposed to get better. So tell us what happened.
His cardiologist told me this stent may slow him down a little bit, which for Marshall maybe isn't a bad thing because he's very wild. But I don't think they realized how much of a change it was going to be for him. But
was
thankfully,
he
yeah, he was struggling. He couldn't walk 30 feet without losing his breath and having to catch up and stuff.
Wow.
But thankfully, about a month after that, he started to normalize. He did come back up into the 80s, but then he started to go too high. And his cardiologist said, maybe he has a clot in that stent or something. We're going to have to go back to the cath lab.
So they wanted his oxygen saturation level to dip. They didn't want it that high. Why is that?
Right. I guess because part of putting that stent in the fenestration to reduce those pressures makes more of the blood shunt across back into the conduit. Mm-hmm. And so when that happens, I guess not as much blood is getting to the lungs as quickly.
Wow. I would think that they would be worried about the cyanosis.
Yeah. Yeah.
But apparently not. Okay.
It's
counterintuitive, doesn't it, Molly?
It does. It does. But I guess this is a very common thing that they'll try to stop the casting. We want to get these pressures down, so we're going to take this chance with cyanosis to hopefully stop these casts.
Okay.
You know?
So was he actually coughing up casts every day?
After the stent, he did really great. He was not casting. He did have a cough every day, but he wasn't producing anything.
Okay.
Yeah, it was pretty weird. But then the casts started to come back. He did start coughing small casts. Thankfully, Dr. Morrell, his cardiologist here in Pittsburgh, she took it very seriously. So she was talking about Marshall's case with a colleague, and the colleague said, I heard about this treatment in Philadelphia for plastic bronchitis that has been having good success. So she sent all of Marshall's records there and really pushed to have the lymphatics team at CHOP look at his case. Also, she referred him to the transplant team for evaluation for a heart transplant.
Wow.
Because until recently, that was the only way they could cure plastic bronchitis was with a heart transplant.
Yeah. Same thing with the protein-losing enteropathy is that they end up looking to transplant to see if that'll fix the problem.
Yes. which is scary. Very scary. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so poor little Marshall, now he's getting all these additional tests, and we're talking about having to go to Philadelphia.
Right.
What about your insurance? Were they okay with all of these different referrals?
It was a big deal. They assigned us a case manager, and then we went to some kind of special department for transplant, for solid organ transplant. They had this lady that would call me all the time and get updates about what was going on with him. Mm-hmm. And thankfully, they were very nice. We didn't have any problems. He had to go on Coumadin with the stent. So they allowed us to get a home INR testing machine.
Really? How nice is that?
Oh, it was so much better.
Yeah.
Yes.
Wow.
So thankfully, we had a good insurance company to work with.
Good. Okay, so tell us about the journey to CHOP.
We waited 6 months to get a surgery date for Marshall. Initially, we had a phone conference with them where we got to tell them about what was going on with Marshall. His case was fairly mild compared to what a lot of these kids deal with the casts and everything. It wasn't a big rush to get him there.
That's nice because you can actually make some plans. You had another child that was at home. It wasn't just Marshall that you had to think about.
Right.
How far is Philly?
It's only 4 hours for us.
That's quite a distance, though.
But it's far enough that it really keeps things interesting, you know.
Right. Okay. So going to Philly is not just going to Philly. It's going to Philly for surgery. Tell us about that.
It was very surreal. We had to pack up all of Marshall's medical equipment. By the time we actually got there for surgery, he was on chest vest therapy, kind of like what they use for cystic fibrosis. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Multiple nebulized treatments every day.
Wow.
They had to switch his Coumadin to Lovenox, so I'm packing around 2 weeks worth of syringes that I was giving him twice a day shots prior to surgery. So we pack up all this stuff. We go there, and we had waited 6 months. Marshall had really started to decline with his energy, his stamina.
Sure.
We were almost afraid he was going to have to be listed for a heart if we couldn't get to Philadelphia soon enough. So it was definitely a challenge. And we show up, and it's huge. I mean, I thought Pittsburgh was a big hospital, you know, but CHOP is huge.
It's like a medical city.
Yes. Yeah, it is. You have the University of Pennsylvania and CHOP and the veterinary hospital. Yeah, it's crazy.
Where did you stay?
We were really thankful that Joe's employer helped us pay for a hotel room. So we stayed, I'm trying to think of what it was. I feel like maybe it was a Marriott.
Pretty close by.
Yeah, we were within walking distance. It was
a bit
of a walk, but at least it wasn't, you know, on the other side of the city or something.
Right. Okay. So, you finally make it there. Now, Marshall's in the hospital. They didn't let you room in.
The first day was all pre-op appointments. Mm-hmm. They did their whole workup because they had to do blood work, x-rays, echo, everything. And we were able to spend the night in the hotel room after that together. And then the very next morning, first thing, we went in through same day surgery. And he had the lymphatic imaging and embolization with Dr. Dory there at CHOP, which was about 7 hours in the operating room.
Oh, wow. That's a long procedure. What exactly do they do, Molly?
They do a full heart cath. They do a bronchoscopy because if there is any pieces of casts or anything in there, they want to make sure they clean that all out.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And then they do imaging of the lymphatic system. So they actually inject a dye into the lymphatic system and put them in a MRI machine to get a map And mm-hmm. from there, they can see abnormalities. Mm-hmm. And in Marshall's case, they found a very large abnormal lymphatic vessel that went from his liver to his lung.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And
so that explained it.
Yeah. Dr. Dory seemed pretty confident that that is what was causing the problem for him.
Oh, okay. So they see this abnormal vessel. Do they just decide to sew it off?
So they actually glue it.
They glue it.
Okay. Yeah, they have some kind of special glue mm-hmm. that they put in.
Okay.
And that seals it off.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So now the drum roll.
Yeah.
Did it work? Because that sounds really scary. 7 hours and all that mapping and then sticking glue in someone's body in a place
right.
that normally is not glue. Did it work?
Dr. Dory was very confident. However, after Marshall had been under anesthesia already that long, they weren't comfortable to keep looking. So he said, I feel confident that this is what was causing the problem, but time will tell if that was the only problem.
And how many years ago was that?
It'll be a year at the end of January.
So we're still in the first year.
Yes.
And so far, so good?
So far, so good.
Oh, wow. I feel like I could take a deep breath now. Okay.
Yes. Yes.
Tell me what advice you have for other families who are dealing with plastic bronchitis and maybe aren't at this point yet.
I would definitely say one thing that really helped me was the plastic bronchitis online community. Mm-hmm. Where I found you, Anna, actually. Yeah, on Facebook is a group for families dealing with plastic bronchitis. And
it's a very active group.
It is. And they're so wonderful. You know.
I've learned so much. And thankfully, my son didn't have to deal with it. But I knew it was something that a lot of families did have to deal with. And I wanted to mm-hmm. learn more. So I asked if I could join the group. And they were very welcoming to me. And when I heard some bits of your story, I said, oh, Molly, you have to come on the program. Just because I think people need to know that there are some treatments that are available. But maybe not everywhere. So
right.
would you recommend CHOP?
Like I said, we were so thankful that Marshall's cardiologist took it as seriously
right.
as she did. But there are a lot of doctors out there that A, don't know what they're dealing with, or B, don't take it as seriously. So I would definitely recommend at least getting your child's case to CHOP, to the mm-hmm. lymphatics team there. Even if you don't go there for the procedure, even just a phone conference with them, to kind of get an idea of what exactly you're dealing with. They may have medication suggestions, be able to give you an idea of what they think.
And they're cutting edge. So whenever yes. there's something new going on, they're right there. They know.
Right.
A lot of times they're the researchers who are doing that research.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, Dr. Dory invented this, you know.
Just amazing.
It is.
Absolutely amazing. And that it works. Now, is this right. something that other hospitals are replicating? Can you get treatments like this elsewhere?
It's my understanding they are trying to get it out there. I believe Children's in Los Angeles. I believe Texas Children's. And I feel like maybe there's another one of the larger centers that has been working.
I wouldn't be surprised if Boston isn't doing it too, because they
could be
cutting edge as well. The thing to do, of course, is to contact CHOP and then say what satellite clinics are doing the same program that you're doing. And they'll be very forthcoming with that, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah. They're doing wonderful things.
It makes you feel like, okay, this is scary, but it doesn't have to be a death sentence. And it doesn't have to be transplant.
Right.
There are some measures in between. Eventually, yes, it may be transplant, but we know that with any of our heart kids, that eventually they may need a transplant. Talk to
right.
us about Marshall's future. What have they led you to believe, knowing that this is still a fairly new procedure?
I think right now it's kind of, as far as the plastic bronchitis goes, hopefully it doesn't come back. You
right.
know, hopefully that was it. Mm-hmm. As I mentioned, this stenting and his fenestration is a real challenge for him. It
sure.
continues to be. So while he improved greatly with the procedure at CHOP. He still struggles with low saturations, energy and stamina issues, just trying to do his best every day. Hopefully, he'll get better and better over time, but he is still followed closely with the transplant team here in Pittsburgh.
So is transplant definitely the next step? They wouldn't consider doing a Fontan revision before they would go to transplant? Transplant's definitely the next step?
So initially, his transplant cardiologist, Dr. Feingold, who is super awesome, wanted to take Marshall back to the cath lab and close that stent.
Okay.
Because it's so hard on him.
Mm-hmm.
He struggles with that.
Mm-hmm.
So Dr. Feingold was in contact with Dr. Dory at CHOP, and Dr. Dory said, you really don't want to close that because that's going to increase the chances of the plastic bronchitis coming back.
Okay.
So we're kind of in limbo.
Right. You know, you're just biding time.
Yes.
Watching him get bigger and bigger so that if he does need a transplant, it can be an adult-sized heart.
Yes. His regular cardiologist had said, if we can just get him down the road a few years, maybe some more advances will be made with transplant to make it safer.
Right.
That's where we are.
So it's a waiting game.
It's a waiting game.
He's not coughing up casts.
Correct.
And so he's got to feel better just not dealing with that cough. Is he still on the chest vest therapy, the albuterol, all of that?
He was able to wean off of the breathing treatments and the chest vest, thankfully. He is still on a steroid inhaler, like what they use for asthma.
Okay.
A really expensive one called Asthmanex. And he has somewhat recently completed some courses of oral steroids because he was having kind of like some unexplained episodes of desatting.
Mm-hmm.
Not really to where you think he's going to produce a cast or anything, but kind of some strange episodes respiratory-wise. So we're still in a better place than we were prior to going to CHOP. But unfortunately, it's still a lot different than he was prior to plastic bronchitis.
Sure. Sure. I want to thank you for sharing your journey. I know it's hard to talk about and revisit some of the experiences that you had, but I think it will help other families who are also dealing with something like this.
That's what us heart moms are for, is to be there for other parents going through this.
Right. Absolutely. It helps to know that you're not alone, and it helps to know that, yeah, it may not be perfect, but it can get better.
Absolutely.
Molly, thank you so much for coming on the program today and talking about the plastic bronchitis journey your family has been on. I hope maybe you can come back in a few more years and share Marshall's journey with us and it has a happy ending.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Anna. I'm always happy to share Marshall's story.
Well, friends, that does conclude this week's episode. If you enjoyed this episode of Heart to Heart with Anna, please leave a review to help others who might be curious about what our podcast is about. And remember, my friends, you are not alone.
Thank you again for joining us this week. We hope you have been inspired and empowered to become an advocate for the congenital heart defect community.